Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you for joining us whenever or wherever you are listening. You are now rocking with the best. My name is Kwame. Do us a favor when you get a chance to subscribe, rate, and review. And if you haven't already, we would love your support on all social media platforms provided by the Minister of Social Information, Brother B. We have a great show today. Great guest joining us, a living legend. And, you know, not just in women's USA hockey, but in hockey in general. Her name is Julie Chu. She'll be kicking with us. But first, joining me as usual, one half of the Get Busy Boys, Elijah Roberts, is in the house. What's cracking? First question I have for you. You're done school now, right?
Yes, sir.
How was your first year?
It was pretty good. I passed all my classes.
We talked about this already, didn't we?
We did briefly, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm older, so sometimes the memory gets shot. But I did want to ask you about the fact that you did not get to play this year. How is that for you? Like, do you feel like you've lost a step? Have you been able to keep your body in shape? Like, what's the thoughts for next season?
Well, I've definitely lost a step just because I don't think you'd make up for not playing. No matter how much training, skating, like there's just, you can't get that same experience from game experience. And even with all that, with the way Canada's been, Ontario specifically, like I haven't really been able to get on the ice and skate. So I definitely have lost a step, but you know, it is going to be a big summer for me. Maybe looking into going down to Michigan for a month or so to do some training down there. Have to look into that. That kind of all depends on how Ontario is. If Ontario opens back to normal, which the way people are getting vaccinated could very well be a thing, then maybe I'll stay and train here. But, you know, I do need to make sure that I'm ready for next season, because taking such time off, there's gonna be effects. And the other thing is, everybody in the league essentially has missed a year. Mm-hmm. So if I can maybe get some good training while some of them aren't, maybe it's gonna help me just have a little bit of an edge on them. And then going in as a rookie as well, now I'm entering with two different rookie classes, and specifically with our team, a lot of players aren't graduating. So mm-hmm. we're just kind of bringing in double the rookies and keeping the same team. So it's going to be a lot of competition. I just got to make sure I'm ready for that.
All right. Well, it's what you want. So it's up to you, brother. You know, yeah. The difference between being good and being great is all up to you. But NHL playoffs have started. How are you guys liking the playoffs so far? The Capitals, they're looking good. They took out Boston first game in OT. Pittsburgh game was sick, even though Pittsburgh lost. Crosby had the sickest hand-eye goal in the second period. You know, and I know that Connor is the face of hockey, but I'm still a Crosby guy until he's out of the league, man. He is there's just something about that guy that just makes so much sense for a team.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the Washington game, and I watched the third period in the overtime of the Pittsburgh game. And I don't know if you saw that shift where Ovechkin just ran over somebody, and then I think Mantha did right after. And that's exactly why I have Washington coming out of that division, because they have the goal scoring, and then they have that. Their leading goal scorer is going to go and run somebody over. So that, I think that series is the tightest one out of all of them, but man, Washington looked good.
It's the first time I've seen Boston not be the aggressor, or, you know, kind of had to.
They're missing Chara this year, and they're missing that little bit of edge that they've always had. And, you know, Washington with Tom Wilson, a lot of people hate him, but I would say he's one of the most valuable players that you could have on your team, especially right now.
Yeah. See, my thing with Wilson is, like, I like that style of player, but it's when they go over, you know, punching the guy when he's down on the ice. Can I just don't like that part of it. And so I'm really hoping that we'll see a Washington-Vegas matchup, and just so I can see Ryan Reeves just say, like, you know, let's see you try that here. That's just my thing about him. Brother B is in the house as well. What's up, B?
Yes, sir. What's good?
You threw up our first round picks.
Always fun because we receive a ton of hate. People real upset, you know, that we didn't go with their team.
Yeah.
You know, we had to tell Akil he couldn't put Kings for his entire bracket, but he came around.
The funny thing is the hate, like the comments. God, it was the one that made me laugh the most. The one about Boston. Somebody said, if you don't have Boston, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, listen, pal. First of all, it's my opinion. Second of all, it ain't that serious. Third of all, go make your own bracket. I never understood why.
You guys moving like Boston's the favorite to win the cup.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, yo, calm down. You know, calm down. And I never really understood. If you don't like something that somebody says on social media, why do you have to comment on it? Why can't you just swipe left, go do something else? It's weird to me. But anyways, keeping it positive, Brother B, break down the picks for those who haven't seen them as of yet. And yes, we'll get Elijah to kind of, you know, give a summary of them.
Yeah, we can do that. And you can find these on our Instagram and Twitter. We posted them all over. So let's start out West. First series would be Avalanche and St. Louis. We got E has the Avs, Kwame, the Blues, Akil, the Avs, and myself, the Avs. What we got, boys?
It's a little bold there.
I'm just saying. I'm just going off of underdog strength. Just I think they're just going to pull it out. I just feel that they're just built like that. I know that has no type of hockey talk in there. I'm just going off of pure emotion on that one.
Well, Petrangelo, who I think it was Ryan O'Reilly, went out and said that they're going to beat Colorado.
So he's doing the Messier. So. Yeah. What's next?
Next series, Vegas and Minnesota. Everyone is riding with the Knights.
Yeah, but they lost that first game.
I got Vegas winning the cup. Mm-hmm. But if there's one team I think that will beat them, it's Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because Vegas, since they've been a franchise, nobody's given them more trouble than Minnesota. And good Minnesota call. Killed them all year this year.
Yes.
So, and Pacioretty's out right now, which is a big, big time player. He might be back next game, but that's the one team that if
they're going to lose, it's going to be there.
I think so. But I still think Vegas is going to pull through.
Okay.
That is a fact that Minnesota, I believe, has the best record against Vegas out of any team. But just after watching Talbot completely and continually just miss big opportunities in the remaining games of the season, I just, you know, goaltending's everything. So I'd love to see it happen, but we'll see.
Yeah, it was a good first game for both goalies. I mean, Fury just standing on his head, but we'll see. Next up,
Oilers and Jets. We got E's got the Jets, Kwame with the Oilers, Akil with the Jets, myself with the Oilers.
Split, dead even. Mm-hmm.
Dead even. It's going to be fun, but I got to ride with the Oils. I just feel like Connor, this is
Connor's. You're pretty much saying you got to ride with Connor, not the Oilers. Connor's playing, then he's either going to win or lose on that series.
That's what I'm saying. Simple as that. It's either him and Draisaitl step up their game, then, you know, I think everybody else will fall.
Then they'll win. If they're at their very best, then.
Yes. If they don't, I feel that too.
If they don't stand a chance because the rest of the team is just not.
I agree with you. I agree. What's up? What's next?
What a reality. All right. And then this series, Toronto and Habs. all you guys got your home pick in.
That's right.
I'm going Habs.
Well, you don't. You're American. You
don't. I don't count. I don't count. Yeah.
Okay. I think it'll be a lot closer than people think. But come on, man. Toronto's been too good, especially against Montreal.
I'm going to say this, and it's going to be. This is bitter and it's petty, and I admit it. As a Sharks fan, I don't know if I can see Jumbo win a cup like in another sweater the year after he leaves us. That'd be such a slap of reality. And man,
that's a holsa. So, that's a holsa right there.
I don't know, man. But we also got our boy Suzuki on the Habs. So
true. I like to
see the underdog.
He's too small. He's gonna get eaten up. So. Just kidding. What's next?
All right, we're going out east. We got Pens and Isles. Let's see. I'm the only one going with the Isles.
And they looked good on Sunday. They looked good on Sunday. So
I'm pretty sure they're ranked second for defensive team, and Pittsburgh's ranked first offensively. So it's kind of just offense versus defense.
Mm-hmm.
That series to me is like dead even. I think we're going to see more than one game go to overtime, like more than one more. But I think I just got Crosby as the X factor. And Malkin didn't even play game one. So
yeah, so we'll see. Next up.
Boston and Washington. Elijah's got Caps. Kwame's got Caps. Akil's got Boston. And I've also got Boston.
We'll see how that goes. We know how we're getting down with that one. So next, we don't even need to talk about that one. Next.
Canes and Preds. Elijah with the Canes. Kwame, Canes. Everyone's got Canes.
Yeah.
Canes are a dark horse to win it all, in my book.
Yeah. I agree with Elijah.
They're good. They're real good.
Last one, is it?
Last one, maybe the best series of the quarterfinals. The Florida team's going out for it.
Wow.
Shout out the homie Anthony Duclair making his NHL postseason debut.
He got to get a little tougher, though. I mean, those guys were – I saw him in a scrum, and I think he should have made a statement and just been like, nah, this ain't going to be, putting your stick in my chest. I'm gonna take 2 minutes.
He got clocked pretty early, so I'm wondering if that kind of messed with him.
True.
But
hey, man, two words on that series: Nikita Kucherov. That's it.
Cooch.
Yeah. That's it.
All right.
That's a difference maker right there, and you've seen it with two goals.
And that's why Elijah has Bolts. Kwame's got the Panthers. I think. Yeah, I've got the Panthers too, and Akil's siding with the E with the Bolts.
That Cooch goal. How did he even score that over the shoulder? Like, I couldn't even believe that went in. That was just like the most insane goal I've ever seen. So might be off on the Panthers, but it's going to be a long series, and it's going to be a long playoff series, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll keep putting up our picks, and everybody can chime in. And if you want to hate is going to be hating. So, have fun with that. Not going to respond to you. Maybe on the podcast, but all right. Coming up, one of the most decorated women in hockey joins us. Julie Chu is on deck. We'll be right back. Our next guest played for Harvard University and in her last year was named Best Collegiate Player. She is tied for the second most decorated U.S. female in Olympic Winter Games history. And in 2014, at the Sochi Olympics, her fellow teammates selected her to be the flag bearer at the closing ceremonies. She's got many awards, many accomplishments, but I would bet the house that her greatest accomplishment is being a mommy. Soul brothers, soul sisters, let me introduce to you Julie Chu. Jules Skeeny, How you doing?
I'm doing great. And yes, I would say my greatest accomplishment are my two daughters, 3.5 and 1. And I was able to get the 1-year-old down just in time to squeak in here and even get a sip of coffee beforehand. So life is really good.
I know that. My son, he's 3.5 right now. So I totally get the, you got to put them down at a certain time and get a run out. And sometimes it's better than the others. But how has motherhood been treating you during this crazy pandemic time?
It's been really good. I would say at the beginning, because my daughter Tessa was born in May. She just had her birthday actually. So we were kind of a little, even though we were even strength for moms versus the kids, the kids were winning really bad.
They always win.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't realize how good I would get at negotiating or how bad I was at negotiating when you have a 3.5-year-old that everything is that. But, you know, I think what's been really special with this time, as much as we would rather have a regular hockey season, we'd rather be able to see our friends and family. We haven't been able to be down in the States. We currently live up in Montreal, Quebec. And so I haven't gone to see my family in Connecticut. So that's been a little bit tough. But with that said, because we're home a lot more often, we get to have a lot of meals together. We get to have breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, everything in between. So we'll cherish those times because the life of a hockey coach or a player, I'm no longer a player, but is busy. And so we oftentimes are away during those special moments.
My saying is, I cannot wait for my son to wake up and I cannot wait to put him to bed.
All in one.
So let's start from the beginning. You were born in Fairfield, Connecticut. What about your parents? Where are they from? And you know, when did they make the move to the United States?
Yeah, so my dad was actually born in China, and at 2 years old, because of the Cultural Revolution that was going on there, they went to Hong Kong. And then from there, they came over to the United States when he was 16 years old. And definitely a true immigrant experience of not having a lot of money, sharing a one-bedroom apartment with three other families. So his mom, his brother, sister, and himself were in one small little room. Another family was in another and one other. And then they shared a common space in a kitchen. So that was their reality. And I'm very grateful for everything they've given me along the way, but how hard they've worked to get to where they are and being able to have the success in their life and the stability of the finances also, I guess. And then my mom was born in New York City. Her dad was from China and her mom's Puerto Rican. So a little mix right there as well.
Oh, you got a little Puerto Rican in you?
A little bit. It helps with the tan too. I don't know about the dance. I wish.
No. Julie, come on. What about the Puerto Rican Day Parade? You ever rock that in New York?
Just once or twice, but not a whole lot in that. I was also always kind of the roamer, a little bit of everywhere. So,
okay.
I think it's special. I think for me, being able to be, have a lot of different backgrounds, have a lot of stories from my family that come from different walks. Like that's what shapes us. And I think that's what's the special part of everything that we get to be a part of is I get to hear the stories of my mom, of my dad, of my, you know, my aunt when times were really different. And they're still, they've changed a lot and we still hope there's going to be more change. But I think that's what's been really fun is to kind of the collection of those and kind of what the blend of our families are right now.
So I read you played soccer, you did some figure skating. How did that transition into hockey?
Yeah, so I first started playing soccer because in Connecticut, that's probably the most popular sport, especially for young girls. And it was really easy because every single elementary school had one for their grade. So you had, you know, a dad or a mom that was the coach and a bunch of us that weren't very good at soccer, just chasing each other around the school field. So I started with soccer. And then one day in second grade, my brother actually came home and asked my parents if he could play hockey. And he had a couple friends at school that happened to play, and my parents knew nothing about it. Like, although they met in New York City, and they knew about the Rangers, and they went to Central Park where my dad split his pants. Falling ones. He's not here to defend himself. And so, but we didn't know a lot about it. But what I was always impressed by my parents is they weren't about closing doors. So instead of saying, okay, we don't do this and we know nothing about it, so why don't you pick another sport we're more familiar with? They went to the local rink in Bridgeport, Connecticut, suited my brother up in hockey gear and put him into learn to play hockey. And my sister and I went into the stereotypical figure skating role. But 2 months later, I was not a stereotypical kid, and I was just kind of this wrecking ball, and I wanted to play hockey, and my parents made the best decision of their life. And they just said yes, just because I wanted to, not because of the Olympics or scholarships or any of that, just because their young daughter wanted to try something new.
That's interesting. Your brother was probably like, hey, I wanted to be the special one in hockey. But I did this first. You touched on it a little bit, but how did your parents support your early days in hockey? How difficult, how easy was it for them? Because again, traditionally speaking, they're probably like, you want to play what? We got to do this, that. How did they maneuver through the hockey space for you?
Yeah, you know, I think they sheltered me in some ways from the negativity that might have been there. All honesty, like, I was really blessed with the team I was surrounded by. They just treated me like another one of their teammates and not a girl that played on the all-boys team. Same thing with my coaches and the parents. And that's what's really important, is the environment that we surround ourselves with. And that allowed me to love hockey and to feel accepted and grow within the sport. So I think in that sense, it was easy for me because I didn't know any differently. But I, for sure, what I've learned later on is more comments from parents. I think if anything, it's the adults that get in the way of a lot of growth or spread the negativity. It wasn't the kids. Like, yes, we're still going to pick on each other every so often, or someone's going to have a joke about my last name or that I'm a girl, but it was pretty minimal compared to some of the comments that I remember, where a coach walked into our locker room at the time and was looking for our coach to sign the game sheet, looked me right in the eye. I was 12 years old and said, "Oh, you guys have a girl on your team. Good luck with that." And just walked out of the room. And you have all these 12-year-old boys that were like, "Hey, come on," like ranging in size from 5 feet to like 5'8". The fact that they were ready to stand up for me, I think made a huge difference in my appreciation for them, but ability to love hockey.
I love about that story? There's a guy, old white guy right now somewhere. And every time you come on TV, someone's like, "Isn't that the girl you were just making fun of?" Hey, shut up. Shut your mouth.
Exactly. It's wild. And as parents, it makes me really cognizant of the way we're raising our daughters, but how we want to create this environment of inclusion and love and support and talking her through like her frustrations, or when she gets cranky that my 1-year-old sister doesn't want to share, but she's not sharing. Well, how do we play this? She doesn't quite get it yet.
So growing up, Olympic hockey must have been the goal for you, but how was your time at Harvard, your playing career there?
Yeah, it was a blast. The Olympics became my dream when in 98, really, when I first saw women's hockey be an Olympic sport. And for many of us on the female side, that was a game changer. That suddenly allowed us to have the visibility to get to the next level, to dream of going to the Olympics, where when I started playing hockey in 1990, that wasn't my dream. It was just to make my local boys team. And then one day I learned about high school hockey, and then the next day university hockey, and that's where I was able to go to Harvard and had the most incredible experience. And I always say that I love the student athlete experience. I think it's really powerful. I've always believed in both aspects, but I also feel like university is such a critical time in developing not only as a hockey player but as a person. And I thought the environment I was in between my teammates and coaches really helped me grow in those aspects, because it wasn't this easy process the entire time. Like, I had a great first year, and my second year was terrible. I just couldn't figure it out, and the effort was there, but sometimes things don't click for whatever reason. But you still are supported, and you have to go through the ups and downs of a season of different challenges and find a way to be resilient and to move forward and try to be positive during it too.
Yeah. Are you still the all-time assist points record holder for NCAA?
Not for NCAA. For Harvard, I believe I'm still for Harvard, or at least the assist holder for Harvard.
Okay, well, let's just say you are.
Okay, perfect. Yes, I am. I don't think it's going to get broken for at least 50 years. So
there you go. Like you're doing the Gretzky thing.
Don't search that, you know, just in case.
Just trust us on that.
Trust us on this.
How are you feeling about the direction of women's hockey right now and where it's going? And, you know, what would be your perfect scenario for women's hockey, let's say, starting next year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me is to have a unified professional women's hockey league.
Agreed.
Just one league, the best players from around the world able to come have livable wages so that the female players don't have to have 2-3 jobs in order to make things work. Or, you know, they get up at 6, they go through their full-time job throughout the day. And then when they're done at 5 or 6, they're rushing to the rink, eating lunch or eating dinner in the car and getting, you know, practicing and getting back late at 11, 12 at night and doing it all over again. So I think for myself, it's finding a way to use the support and momentum of women's hockey right now. There are some great entities in place, the NWHL, the PWHPA, the NHL. There's a lot of people that are passionate about hockey and want to see it get to the next level. So I think having some steps, having some really good conversations and getting on the same page in a lot of places will hopefully move women's hockey in the direction that it needs to go and really be a unified entity.
What part do you want to play when that day happens?
Yeah, that's hard to say. I think right now I'm still close with a lot of the players that are currently playing. Some of them are on my staff at Concordia University. And I think for myself, I love coaching at the university level. I feel really blessed for the opportunity I have. And maybe right now the part is to prepare players for that jump to the professional game. To continue to be a sounding board for ideas and thoughts that might be a little bit more removed from actually being involved in the league at this point. So what that means down the road, who knows? I think we're always considering what's best for ourselves personally at the moment, what we get to be involved in, the impact we get to have, but also knowing that great opportunities, wherever they come, we want to evaluate and make sure that they're important. But for the moment, Concordia has been a special place for our family, where we can combine and balance really the work life and something we really are passionate about.
So we're celebrating our Asian and Pacific Islander peeps this month. And I wanted to speak to you about representation. You have many firsts for young Asian girls to look up to. How do you use your name to grow the game culturally?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I first joined the national team, I didn't realize how important that was. That's just in all honesty. I was working a camp for Cammy Granado, and I was 18 years old. And I was just kind of like this naive, happy-go-lucky kid that was just excited to be around my role model and get a chance to coach. And I remember the second day, there was a mom that came up to me and said, "I just want to let you know that my daughter came home last night, and she was an Asian. And she says, there's someone else at camp that looks like me." And it just blew me back, because it was the first time I realized how important it is for young girls and young Asian Pacific Islander girls to have great role models, to be able to look up and aspire to it. And I alluded to it before that 1998 was a powerful time for women's hockey, because suddenly we were able to see what was possible. Before that, it was not that it's a smaller scale, but it was maybe university hockey or a national team in general. But I think for myself, I want to be proactive. I want to be able to speak to awesome people like you and to get the word out there. But to make sure that we're working within our communities to see how we can connect with different organizations within our community to get young girls or or people in the API community mm-hmm. out and trying hockey for the first time, which isn't always easy because, you know, hockey, you know, it takes a lot of resources initially to get introduced to it. And hopefully we can make it accessible and feel welcoming for everyone.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's important that girls get into the game, but for me, it's really important that minority girls get that extra attention that they've never had in the past. Do you see this kind of like a mission for yourself maybe in the future?
Yeah, I think we've been doing it for a long time in regards to females in hockey. A lot of times we've been trying to break down those barriers and continue to do so. If we think about when women's hockey is on TV, which is great because we're starting to get more coverage, and that's a huge part of the visibility of growing the game, the fan base and all those aspects. But it's incredible. You just look at the comments and the naysayers. There's yeah. quite a few of them that have never even seen the game of women's hockey before. So we've been fighting that battle for a long time, and it's something that we don't really have a choice in it. It's part of who we are and that we're going to take those steps. But at the same time, I think now that extra layer for me, it is important because I've got nieces and nephews. I've got my own children, and I want them to know that they don't have to be limited. They don't have to wonder if they should be involved in something because they haven't seen someone else that's been in that role before. I want them to be able to know that whatever they're interested in, that they can go after it. And I think part of that in hockey, which has been so special to me, is finding a way to make it more visible for visible minorities to be there so that it's a wider pool of young girls that look up and say, hey, maybe I can try that. And they still might hate it. That's okay. I guess so. But it's making people realize, yes, like I want to try that. And I believe that I can because I can see someone else doing it too.
Are there some things that you've done or do you have anything planned in terms of maybe getting minority girls in the game?
Yeah, for us, I think a lot of it is just running our local hockey camps. Every chance I get, I go back to Bridgeport, Connecticut, the Wonderland of Ice, where I grew up playing, and I make sure that I run a summer camp. Unfortunately, the pandemic has delayed that for a couple years here, but it's a place that I plan to go back to and really stay engaged in that. I think the more we can go into our communities and do that, it's really important. And I think it's the same thing when we go into schools, we want to be great role models. So those are things that on a monthly basis or very often I try to take part in because those are a huge part of, you know, it seems not this active going out and soliciting for young minority girls to come and join hockey, but by going into these atmospheres and being able to let them know that they're included in it and they can be if they want to, that's what I try to do the most is just in my daily life, how do I interact with others?
That's awesome because, you know, when we're, you know, in the state of hockey where we are at right now, there is a huge push to get more minority kids into the game, regardless of how far they take it. But usually when you talk about that, the first thing you're thinking about are the boys. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, you know, I know there's a big push to get young Black and Hispanic and Asian boys in the game. But if you think it is hard to get that group into the game of hockey, you can't imagine what it must be like for young Black, Hispanic, and Asian girls to play the game of hockey. So when I think of people like yourself and Sarah Nurse and Angela James, I'm just hoping that you are all as females are on that same page to say like, you know, I got to give that extra because they're not being looked at the same way as the boys of color.
Absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. And actually Sarah Nurse and I, we sat on the NHL Player Inclusion Committee together and that was a powerful experience because I remember speaking with Kim Davis before I agreed to be a part of it because I didn't want it to just be something that the NHL was checking off their list. Right. That, you know, organizations now felt that diversity, equity, and inclusion were things they should do and it looks good versus really wanting to dive in and make cultural changes. And after my conversation with Kim, who's absolutely incredible, she really assured me that, no, this was to dig in and to try to put some tangible things down on paper that then can go within, whether it's the NHL league offices, the club levels, or even other organizations. How do we make hockey more welcoming for everyone? So I thought that was really powerful. And Sarah's doing a lot of incredible things. And she's a current player, so it's even more incredible, because I do think the social media aspect, which she's really great at, and interacting with fans and really communicating in an awesome and intelligent way, is a great way to reach a lot of different people.
Yeah,
she's a huge ambassador already, and will only continue to be that as she moves forward.
Two great ladies in the world of hockey, Kim Davis and Sarah Nurse. But, you know, we spoke about Angela James, and I'm always curious when I talk to the OG women in hockey, how much of an impact was she as a player to the game of hockey, the women's game of hockey?
Yeah, I think Angela James was incredible. One, I never got a chance to play against her or with her, but enough to hear her as a legend, all the stories that were told about just the competitor that she is. And, you know, the way she competes, the way she prepared, but just what she brought to that level of play at that time. Because if, like everything, women's hockey, men's hockey, all hockey is growing every year. We laugh about one Olympics to the next, how incredible it is. I'm like, oh my goodness, I would never have made the 2018 team. I barely made 2014, but they're so talented. And you look at pioneers like Angela James and what she was able to do when resources and accessibility was actually pretty limited. And that's what I think is so incredible about what she was able to do in being such a prolific goal scorer, but just leader and driver ambassador. She came at a time where it really wasn't about women playing hockey and they weren't wanted, and having to be tough as nails to break those down, so that by the time I came around, I felt more accepted already, even though we were still breaking down barriers. So I think that she's someone that's still involved in hockey. She's going to be a name that is going to resonate for many, many years. Because of her natural impact of what she brought on the ice, but now what she continues to do off the ice too.
So your wife, just like you, is an accomplished national player. Got to give much love and respect to my fellow Canadian, Caroline Ouellette. What's the rule in the house? Because that U.S.-Canada rivalry is probably the greatest in all of sports. And I'm talking not Canadian men, that's great, but the women, there's just that extra fire, because, you know, they're not playing in a all women's league, and it's not like, this is something that, you know, you got to look forward to. But what's the rule around the house, because you guys have played against each other in some crazy matches?
Well, now I think I'm fully outnumbered, because we live up in Montreal. So we're surrounded by Canadians and, you know, maybe an occasional American friend here and there. But I came home one day and my daughter was, you know, at the start of the hockey game and singing the Canadian anthem in a loud, loud voice. And I was like,
yes.
Can I put a rule in? This isn't allowed, but she was so cute when she was doing it, I have to admit. So, I think it's really similar in a lot of ways. I think we're really lucky that we're both coaches and we both see the game from a coaching standpoint. I think that allows us to sometimes take away the edge of our alliance to our teams, even if we're just watching the World Championships or the past Olympics or the upcoming one. I think it's important for us to also be able to realize if we're kind of getting to that edge, we're all riled up for at each other. But when we were players, what was really important is that we wanted to excel. Both of us wanted to win, absolutely. And we really cared deeply about our team. So our focus was, how do we be as prepared as possible, push each other, so we can be the best for each of our teams. And then when we get down to it, we're both competitive in anything we do. So we all want to win. And at the end of the day, I think that is the challenging part that we have to work on post championship is one of us is typically really happy and one is not that happy. So I think it's allowing each person to have their feelings and allow them to also celebrate if they need to, or have a couple moments if we need to digest the loss. But it, ultimately, Carolyn's my best friend, and she knows really closely what we have to go through to be elite athletes and for such a long time. So I think that's our really special connection, and that allows us to really understand each other really well too.
Wow. We can't really think of other rivals who are in relationships. How did you and Caroline meet and come to be? Give us that beautiful love story of you guys connecting.
You know, the women's hockey world is small. So she was playing at the University of Minnesota Duluth. I was at Harvard. So it was more as opponents for a long time, but there was always an appreciation for even players you play against, even rival teams, of the talent they are as players and their impact that they have on their teams and on the game. So we'd only known each other from afar for a long time. And then we started working a hockey camp together in 2005 and just met as friends. Fortunately,
that's how it always starts.
Exactly. Just starts, you know, this hockey thing connects a lot of people. And then with time, we got a chance to build a great relationship and really an appreciation for one another for what we can bring not only to our teams, but just the passion that we were able to share together. So started in 2005 and it's been a really special journey over a bunch of world championships and Olympics. And so I think that there's some really special aspects to being able to share those moments, the difficult aspects post-game, but hopefully, again, as we step back and think a little bit more as a coach's perspective, we can also really appreciate kind of what we've been able to do and to some extent together, even if we're on different teams, because it's not easy to play on a national team at an elite level for a long time. The younger players come in and they're talented. They're a lot of times faster and have resources when they're younger that we didn't have. So to be able to be a part of teams over four Olympic games for both of us was really special to be able to take part in. And I think that that's something that we'll be able to hopefully share with our daughters in a really special way as they go and pursue whatever they're interested in later on, to just know that they can set these dreams and they can find ways to adjust and adapt and continue to chase after their dreams, regardless of what those might be.
The relationship is definitely very special. You guys both played each other Vancouver 2010. I remember exactly where I was watching that final match. Sochi 2014, exact same thing for me. Can you explain for those out there who do not realize how intense the Canada US women's team rivalry is? Break it all down for those who don't know how intense that rivalry is.
Yeah, I think what's incredible to know is that Canada and the U.S. Over the last couple of decades have proven themselves to be the top teams in the world. There's still some tremendous other teams that have come along. Finland right now is right there and they're pushing strong as well. Russia has been a really solid team for a long time now. And I think for us, it's like that rival, whether, from being up in Quebec and in Montreal now, it's like when they say like the Habs and the Bruins. Now there's like this, the Sharks in the Water type of feeling. And that's really similar to the U.S.-Canada rivalry. It's because we don't have that Stanley Cup right now, that championship where you build a season towards that moment, our world championships are that. Our head-to-head against these players that we know really well, that we want to win, and we're fighting, tooth and nail for every step to win a battle, to get that edge. That's how it is. And although women's hockey doesn't have full checking, so you won't see the huge open ice hits, and you won't see the fights. Sometimes there's still been some brawls at times, but it's incredible. Anyone that comes to see women's hockey in person knows how physical it actually is and how fast it is. And skilled. And I think that's a huge part of what the U.S.-Canada rivalry has done, is really pushed that along. And I think that we see that in every Olympic Games, how close and competitive it is. In 2010, in all honesty, we lost 2-0, and Canada was better than us during that time. They were leading up to the Olympics. they just had a really well-rounded team and they performed really well in Vancouver. Sochi, I'd have to say, we ended up losing in the gold medal game, but we probably deserved a better fate just based on what we had played for the majority of that game. But unfortunately, the majority of the game doesn't win if you don't finish it in the end. And so that one was a bit of a dagger. And you can imagine how fiery we get amongst each other and competing for that. But that's our standard and that's what we want. So anytime we step on the ice, it's physical, it's tough, and we're ready to play. And I think that's what's really special is there's not an off day. And yeah. I think that's what I'm really proud about too, about our game.
How long does that loss sit with you? Because I know some people, they play a game and after the game, they kind of just, it is what it is. But other people, that haunts them for a long time. But how long did that really stick with you?
Yeah, so she haunted me for a while. I think every loss and big championship loss and Olympics especially, because you put so much time and effort into it, and we want gold. That's what we set our eyes for, and that's what we want. So when you come with something less at the moment, it's disappointing. I think Sochi, the way it unfolded with us being up 2-0 and then Canada coming back 2-1 with maybe around 3.5 minutes left, and then tying it with just under a minute to force an overtime. It was an emotional roller coaster. But what I was really proud about it was when we went back to the locker room, it could have been easy to look around the locker room and everyone's heads hanging, because you basically had your gold medals with your hand on that gold medal. They even had, and in all honesty, we walked by the gold medals because they already had everything set up to present medals. So you have to go through this psychological part of going through that process. And we get back to the locker room, and I was really proud with how our team reset. And it was like in between any other locker room, everyone took a deep breath because you need to. And then we went about our preparation for the overtime period, and it didn't work out, but not everything works out. And that's the annoying thing about sports sometimes. But at the same time, I think that's what really made me proud. And kind of from there, the growth that women's hockey had from that incredible game. But so she stung for a while. I think especially because I was living in Canada right afterwards. So there was a lot of commercials here with the Sochi win. And you even get, in all honesty, you get some Canadian fans that are just trying to be lighthearted and make fun about it and joke. But they'll say to you like a week after, you know, what an amazing game, but I'm so glad you lost. And you're like,
yeah, well, you know, I want to go in the corner.
Maybe in about 10 years. Yeah. Give me a little bit of time. Too but soon. It was about a week ago.
Too soon? Yeah. And how about you put on some skates and go get that puck in the corner? I'll yeah. be right behind you.
Yeah, and again, it was never in this negative way. It was just trying to have this funny banter. But so, yeah, that one stung a little bit. So I think in 2018, when our U.S. team ended up winning gold in a shootout, I burst into tears because I was so happy and I was so pumped because a lot of those veteran players had lived through losing in Vancouver and Sochi. Right. And I knew what a big moment it was for them. And for even now as an alumni and now fan in 2018, it was an awesome moment for myself too.
Yeah, not the same.
Carolyn might have been on the couch next to me and it might not have been the same for her either. But she had four. But she got four, so you know, I was like, you can give me one. And it's not even me, it's like just my team.
Yeah. You're like, okay, listen, those, they're not going to go up on the wall. You can draw people there and never bring them. You know, I've always actually wondered, not that it would get boring, but is it kind of boring that it's always Canada, U.S., Canada, U.S., Canada? Wouldn't it be more fun if it was some other teams, like, you know, Sweden, Switzerland, Germany, or something like that, like competing at the same level? And you know, and what are your thoughts of hoping that we get to that place for women's hockey?
Absolutely. I think in our most ideal world is that we create a system where there's enough players in every country and enough resources invested in every team to really grow and have an 18 tournament, a 10-team tournament where anyone can beat anyone. right? Mm-hmm. But we're not there yet for a couple of reasons. One, the pool of women's hockey players in the US and Canada is really large. Like, you know, I think we're at 90,000 in Canada and 80 plus thousand in the US. But then you go to Finland and Sweden, who are still have really strong programs, and they might have, you know, 7,000 or 8,000. So if we look at pool of players, and you go to China or Russia, and maybe they're at 1,000. So there's a lot of reasons for that. And then beyond the player pool, what kind of resources and funding are governing bodies putting into their programs? I think one of the challenges that we don't see about women's hockey is that not every single team is full-time before the Olympic year. And so that's challenging. For Canada and the US, we have a full-time residency program starting in August or September, and training full-time through the Olympic Games. And I remember one Olympic Games, one of the teams, I believe it was Finland, maybe had some spotted camps here and there, but maybe weren't full-time until December. And I think that is difficult. If we're not, at the very least, every team should be able to get together full-time for those 6, 7, 8 months leading up to the Olympics to really give each other the best chance to really developing, and then getting to that tournament to try to close the gaps that are there right now. But we have seen some growth. Finland's been pushing really hard and making some noise in the world championships, and they're going to be a contender in the Olympic Games there. So how do we consistently do that for other programs is something that's going to continue to have to get worked on, and resources have to be put in by whether it's IHF or governing bodies ultimately.
You seem to have this love for coaching. You've been doing it for a long time at many different levels. And I mean, we've started to see it in the NBA with Becky Hammon coaching with the Spurs. I believe the NFL may have a female coach, but I'm not too sure yet. How long do you think it is before we see a woman coaching in the NHL?
Yeah, I think it's going to come sooner than later. Kendall Coyne Schofield actually was just a part of the AHL, I think the Ice Hogs. So she's affiliated with the Chicago Blackhawks. So she was just on their bench a couple days ago. So I think that's a huge step in the right direction. And we're already seeing it happen within the AHL, that different clubs are starting to bring on women's players or females into roles within their coaching staffs, whether it's skills coaches, scouting, whatever it might be. So there's a place for it for sure. I think the women can bring like anything. Diversity is important in who we hire and bringing different perspectives to organizations, to businesses. And the Seattle Kraken are a great example right now that they're really creating an organization that's diverse and inclusive in the way that they're hiring currently. And that's going to help to really grow their business in a lot of ways. So I think that it's going to be coming and hopefully sooner than later. And that'll be really another big, big important step, because as you said, the NBA and the NFL currently have female full-time coaches working on their staffs, you know, on their benches, on the sidelines. And it's going to happen in the NHL, AHL sooner than later.
Can you see yourself being in that role?
Maybe one day. As I said before, I love the university game. I really enjoy what I'm doing, the ability to develop our strong young women. We get a chance in a time where they're young adults and really figuring out what they want to do in their next steps after university. And I'm really inspired by how hard they work every day, the dedication they have, and their true desire to want to develop in all aspects, as students, as athletes, but more importantly, as people. And we spend a ton of time in our team and our program speaking about our culture, speaking about how we can make an impact for those around us. So that's, I think, where right now I feel like I'm thriving. But obviously, the NHL, the AHL is always that next step, amazing as well. So open to everything, but loving what I'm doing right now.
So we are in the celebration, as I said before, for our Asian and Pacific Islander brothers and sisters this month. How proud are you that the hockey world is actually taking the time to really make this a mandate of theirs to, you know, give the flowers to those who are around and those who have long since passed but celebrating this month, because like I never grew up with Asian Pacific Islanders Month. You know, Black History Month is something I know since maybe like high school and stuff like that. So these are all new. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this recognition of this month.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's incredible. Right now, I think it's a really important time for social change. It's always important time, but there's a lot of avenues and a lot of, I think, need for it and visibility for it and thirst for that change. So we're currently in the part where we want to celebrate and we want to be able to recognize different groups, organizations, different people for various things. And so this was a huge step in being able to honor the Asian Pacific Islander people, to recognize them and to realize that you're important part of this. And even though you are a minority and have challenges amongst yourselves or amongst ourselves, is how do we then come together and celebrate those differences that we're trying to do, whether it's Black History Month or, LGBTQ plus, Pride Month. Mm-hmm. These are all really important things. And I know that the NHL is starting to really take hold of these. They've done it for a while in different capacities. And I believe this is the first time they're celebrating the API Heritage Month, but it's a good first step. And anytime we can celebrate something on a monthly basis, that's a step. And then how do we interlace that actually in everyday lives and, mm-hmm. and more consistently besides just having, 1 month where we're celebrating Black History, Pride,
And API. We'll see you guys. We'll see you guys next year.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, did it. Right. It's the first step to everything we do. And it's the same thing for our hockey team or whatever it is. We can celebrate it. But then how do we celebrate something, bring recognition to it in a very important way, but then actually have it become intertwined with our daily lives and the way we celebrate it or the way that it becomes more normalized and we're more aware of different things. So I think it's the first good step and we'll see now what we can do. Say we're talking about the NHL at the club levels to honor those, that momentum. And within our university teams, what can we do amongst our players and our staff and university to make sure that we're consistently honoring and celebrating all the things that we do on those big month celebrations.
Yeah. My new saying now for this space is normalizing minority faces and voices in the game of hockey. And, you do that just by being you and by coming on this podcast. I think it's really cool. We just rocking, I tell people you're rocking with the best. We always bring the best. So my girl, Jules Skeeny, I got one more thing for you.
Yes.
Music is very important to athletes. It gets them hype. It gets them enthusiastic. Gets them ready for those big games. And at the end of every show, we ask our guests to give us their top five songs that they listen to on the way to the arena. Big game. I need your top five songs, but I don't need your top five songs from 2010 and 2014 because we know the outcome there. So we need a different top five.
Those top fives didn't work. Those top five.
So you got to have a different.
You just ruined it right there. Well, sadly enough, like nowadays, my top five has to be Disney songs because that's all that rocks in this household.
Baby Shark, you got Baby Shark.
Moana's huge here, so like Moana, and then Let It Go. All those things are really big.
But if you were to imagine yourself getting one more shot at the Olympics, what would be that song to make you say, I'm ready to go?
Well, that song or the songs?
Give me five songs.
Give me five songs. Okay. This is probably why I didn't have a whole lot of success. I like Adele.
Okay. Adele's good.
Adele's good.
What's the song? Hello?
Well, Hello is always good, but Someone Like You. We'll go
Julie,
that.
Julie, you're not listening to that before you get on the ice.
Well, not right before the ice. So this is a little of the background is that I worked in Albany, New York area. So I worked at Union College. And then after Saturday, when we'd be done with our games, because our structure is different and we have to have a full-time job, I would then be in the car for 5 to 3 hours, depending on where I was driving to, either Montreal, Toronto, and Boston. So you can only have so much pump up music for 3 to 5 hours. If you're 5 hours the only pump up, by the time you get to the game, you're going to be sleeping.
Too wired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got Adele. Give me 4 more.
Okay, so we've got Pink. She's always been great. She's a little bit of everything. A little rocker there too. Probably some of the songs. I'm not really a swearer, but a little mix of everything there.
Okay.
For her, I like the Avicii "Wake Me Up" for this. And then there's two songs that was just because of from my Harvard days, and they're always going to be the ones that pump me up because again, university was such an influential time. So Celine Dion, "I'm Alive."
What?
I know. You guys think this is like, I just lost so many bonus points here, but I'm just going to go with it. You associate songs with people and it was a good time. Right. And then the last one is Twisted Sister.
We're not going to take it.
That's it.
You took it in 2010 and 2014. So
I did. But you know, we won a couple of CWHL championships mixed in there.
Listen, let me tell you something. Your resume is deep. So those are just ego ones that you know you wish you had, but your resume is deep. Nobody has taken anything away from you and what you've done. And you know, actually last thing I would say to you is, when you are inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, who is the first person you're going to thank?
Well, Kwame, right there.
You heard it here first.
And Julie, if you don't, I'm going to be in that audience. Hey. You better take your mama. You see this? Yeah. You said I was first. I know that's your mother and your father, but still, come on. All honesty. When you are inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, because you will be, we know that. It's only a matter of time. Who will be the first people you thank when you think about your hockey career?
Yeah, I think, my family for sure. I think my mom and my dad for just saying yes. And because it would have been so easy for them to say no to their young 8-year-old daughter that wanted to play a sport they knew nothing about. And then I would have been like, okay, because I just wanted to do it because my older brother played hockey. So I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be anywhere and we wouldn't be having this conversation. And then for sure, Carolyn. Carolyn, and we can throw in our daughters in there as well. Yeah. But those are some of the most influential people in my life that on a daily basis, and this is what's been really important to me, is the impact we can have on those around us on a daily basis is really the avenue that I believe that we're going to create some really substantial change in our next leaders. And that's what my parents were able to do and the love and support and guidance they gave me and what I get to see every day from Carolyn and the way that she approaches not only her career from a hockey player, but as a coach and kind of the love, the support and the drive that she has for those around her. So those would be kind of my people and obviously a few others mixed in there as well.
Parents, if you are listening right now, all it takes is for you to say yes when your child asks you for something that they seem very passionate about, and you never know what can happen. So God bless your parents for saying yes, because they gave us one of the top 5 greatest female hockey players in the history of hockey to this day. That's a fact. That's just a fact.
I appreciate that. Some might deny that, but I'll take it.
Take it. I said it. So, Julie, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and keep doing what you're doing. And we hope to get you back on the show again sometime. Maybe get you and Caroline on together. We could get a chirp off going. You know, have some fun with that. Okay, we're gonna do that for sure. You'll come back, right?
Yes, that sounds like a deal for me. Thank you both a lot, and I appreciate what you're doing also to give powerful voices and visibility and just having some fun too while we do it.
All right, Jules Skinny. Peace out.
Take care. Be well.
Yes, you too. All right, so that was Julie Chu right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast. Once again, coming in with the heavy hitter, Elijah. Like, tell me that wasn't one of our top five interviews since we've been doing this show.
No, honestly, probably is. And, you know, you don't really realize it, but like you said, we're talking to one of the top five women players of all time. So to have, like, just to have her on the show is pretty special. And then she came in and, you know, brought some real knowledge, and you know, she was great. And I'll let you in on a little secret. You're dissing the Adele, but our Team Canada team that won in 2017, our win song, don't ask me, because I didn't pick the music, was believe it was Hello by Adele.
Really?
That was our win song.
Okay.
That and some Justin Bieber.
Yeah, well, you didn't have it. You didn't have control of the aux.
I didn't have control, but it worked. But it worked. We won. So
yeah, and that's all that counts. But yeah, no, she was awesome. First Asian female to play on USA hockey team, and yeah, that's what this podcast is all about, man. Just bring in the heavy hitters and trying to expand our deck as far as those who have killed it in the game of hockey. So yeah, man, hopefully we'll have young Akil back next week.
I think we should, if not next week, the week after.
All right.
He's been talking to me about trying to find a place downtown, because I know he wants to live in Toronto this year, and he did say he was coming back real soon. So
okay,
and then I'm sure we'll be able to get some in-person content going too once he gets back.
That'll be fun, because he's fully vaccinated. So
yep, he's fully vaccinated. And then both, you got your first shot, right?
I got my first shot. Second shot's in August, which is
same here,
unreal, but hopefully I can get it earlier. But listen, folks, thank you very much for joining us. Make sure once again you hit us up on all social media platforms. Subscribe, rate, and review the show. And we really appreciate your time. For Elijah Roberts, nice. Brother B, my name is Kwame, and we are out. Bong, bong.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Cheese a dozen, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power, statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson, I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, which time for lunch? Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need ya, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
Let's dedicate this one to Jade and Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, boy. That big truck, I don't give a f***. Only really want a house for the gift. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.